morning.
Let me take this opportunity and welcome all of you after a very successful World Cup. And I hope you have all got that and not only to play tennis, not carry the ball. We have some several presentations from my to hold up. I will then ask members to try to introduce themselves. And the leader of the parliamentary association, Mr. Kalamakova, this will be here. And also from the Water Health Commission, they will also introduce your application. Before doing that, let me apologize for the chairperson. She's going up late. I am Masan Mithik Mate, member of the committee from the ASO. I'm the acting chair.
I'm Zubile Mieri. I'm a member of the committee and parliament.
I'm Tim Dalton, a member of the committee from the Commons Association. My name is Denise Lovemore. I represent the New Democratic Alliance on
the My name is Gareth Morgan from the Democratic Alliance.
I'm Lauren Trading from the Independent Democrat.
Edwin Conroy, can you see the person?
Shafiq Edwin for Water Research Commission.
Joe Burgess from the Water Research Commission.
Can I be my team chair?
Yes.
Chair, just up front, in terms of just, can I do the apology after I've introduced the team, or can I do it now?
Before.
Before, okay. Chair, just to note, Acting DG attended her apology for this meeting. She has to attend, is obliged to attend the cabinet reforce, which is taking place at the same time as this particular session, and she did tender an apology. She has requested that I leave the Water Affairs delegation. My name is Trevor Balzer, and I leave the delegation not only on behalf of the Acting DG, but also in my new role in the department as Chief Operating Officer from the 1st of this month. If I could just then introduce my team. We've got quite a large team here. We have two presentations we're doing, and I'll just ask my team just to indicate by hand as I go through them. Next to me, Mr. Mangiseni Netumbada, who's Acting DG Policy and Regulation. Mr. Helfart Muller, Acting Chief Director of Regulations. Mr. Marius Keith, Deputy Director from Gauteng Office, and he's been charged with the responsibility of leading our AMD team. Ms. Babalwa Manyakanyaka, from she's Director of Policy Coordination in my office. Mr. Vincent Monane, a Deputy Director from my office as well in Policy Coordination. Ms. Tandeka Mbasa, BDG Regions. Mr. Errol Makoba, from the Parliamentary Officer from the Ministry. Dr. Guy Preston, a program leader for Working for Water, Working on Fire. Guy, you should be this side of that. I'm not introducing that again. And then Ms. Mari Brisley Clavis, the regional head for Northwest. And then Ms. Wendy Ralekwa, also a director from Northwest. And Chair, I think I've covered my full team. If there's anyone else that does arrive during the course of the meeting, I will alert you to it as well. But thank you very much.
I think we introduce those people who are not yet. You spoke of Mrs. Mbasa, don't you?
Mrs. Mbasa, yes, she's here.
Oh!
Okay. I'm saying my status from the Water Affairs Commission. With me, there is Karen Sanchenka. Research manager,
Water Use and Waste Management, and then I've got Dr. Shafiq
Adam, who's our ground
specialist,
Barbosa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The first presentation we are doing is the one on acid mine drainage. I'm by no means an expert on acid mine drainage in my role as Chief Operating Officer, and I brought the subject content managers, line managers down here, and we will do the presentation. So the first presentation, the leading will be done by Mbangi Nkumbada, and he will be assisted by Marius Kiert. So if it's okay with you, Chair, I will just step back so that Marius can sit in the front. Are you going to sit over there? Okay. So I'll hand over to Mongi to start with the presentation. They've got a slide presentation which they will be going through. It's just quite a long presentation, and I've asked them just to try and keep it down to around about 30 minutes in terms of the guidelines which were given to us. Thank you, Chair. Can you proceed? There's nothing more.
If you could also indicate the government with
the acid mine drainage one, Chair. So, Chair, if I could just ask my team to speak up when they present in the absence of your microphone system. And if they do fade as they go through, if you could just give them a nod as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, Patron, and Trevor. The presentation that we have, as you have seen on the screen, is going to be done by myself, by Mbangi Nkumbada and Marius Kiert. We have structured the presentation in three parts. I will start at the beginning to look at the sort of what we see as the big picture of the situation in terms of acid mine drainage in general. We will look at the issues of concerns and risks that are associated with acid mine drainage. Marius Kiert will go into a little bit of detail in terms of a particular environment that people are probably aware of, which is the Witwatersrand challenges that we've actually been dealing with for quite some time now. And at the end, I'll come back just to sort of show some pointers in terms of what we see as a way forward in terms of some of the things that we need to be doing. I am also told that a lot of people are now aware of how this issue of acid mine drainage is generated in terms of things such as exposure of rocks that are contained sulfides and so on, and iron pyrite, those things. Iron pyrite, for those who may know, is what people refer to as full gold, which is just made or something like that. Which results in production of acidified water containing elevated concentrations of sulfates and other minerals. It is largely associated with particularly gold mining, coal mining as well, and we'll show some of the slides that show the sort of the areas where these activities are in the country. For example, I think the pictures that you have will show that. If you look at the legend there, you will see that the blue is showing a sort of base metal type mining throughout the country. Also, the black is showing mainly the coal, which you probably are familiar with in the Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal areas and so on. And then the yellowish is looking at precious metals, so to speak. Those are the areas that are highly mined at the present moment, with less on the other parts of the country. As an example there, this is a map that we generated from the Department of Agriculture and Land Administration in Mpumalanga at the time. The colors that you can see, mainly this is also showing the new areas that are actually currently being mined or that have been where applications for new mining applications have come, especially the red color that you can see as well in the in that area. And it's superimposed on the catchment in terms of water catchment. If you look at the map that shows the in terms of the Crocodile and Komati, for example, and Olifants on the other side and so on. So you can see actually the kind of activities that we are talking about. The risks that are associated with this, and I think a lot of you are probably aware, because this has been debated for quite some time as well. We're talking about low pH, which I think some of the discussions that we'll be talking about here may cover that as well. High sulfate, levels of risk metals, in some cases radioactivity, obviously, depending on where we are.
If you can avoid that position.
Pardon?
If you can avoid that position, that's pretty limited.
Oh, okay, thank you. The acid mine drainage that are associated with low acidity, if I can use that word, I think it's better that way. High sulfate, elevated levels of heavy metals and radioactivity, and so on. Obviously, we have had in the past, and there have been lots of debates that probably this is one of the biggest environmental challenges ever that the country would have faced. And there's a lot of energy that we are putting in over time to actually try to address it, both in terms of locally, as Marius will indicate, and also in terms of looking at the global setup in terms of how do we deal with it holistically at that level. The negative impact on water quality, on the quality of water resources, needs no recitation. I think we are quite aware of the impact on groundwater and surface water, and a lot is actually being looked at in terms of how do we begin to do some of those. And the problems include issues relating to flooding and decanting of abandoned mines and areas such as that, or mines where they are not necessarily operating at the moment. And Marius will talk to some of the details on that a little bit later. Also, it has also been indicated that there is also inter-mine migration of mine water that threatens operational safety. So even the mining operations themselves do look at some of this in terms of ensuring that when they are working, the water is actually pumped out and so on. So it's quite a big activity going on there. The derelict and ownerless mines is an eye problem, particularly what we regard to as legacy type thing, which is coming from many years of operations. I think some of the numbers that you will see there probably even goes to more than 100 years of mining that has taken place, where the mines are not really owned by anybody, which becomes part of the responsibility of the state to try to assist or to support that process. Other risks relate to instability of geology, sinkhole formations, seismic effects, meaning in terms of movements as well, destroying of ecosystems and heritage sites. A typical example on that is there is work that has also been done, and we are also looking at the implication for the areas such as the Cradle of Humankind. In fact, there was a big project that was done through the Council for Geoscience, and we are actually looking at that in terms of what is the likely impact in terms of some of the activities that are coming, particularly in areas which Maria will talk about as an example. The acid mine drainage in the Mpumalanga area, as an example, which I've shown the picture earlier, you may be familiar with the fact that quite a large percentage of our coal as a country comes from that area. Also issues relating to abandoned mines, decanting, acid mine drainage. Also, the issues relating to the capacity to dilute waste discharge is limited, obviously because of the amount of water that we have, which is not necessarily sufficient. An example being in Olifant River, where salts have to be removed in order to try to manage the situation. We can say there that there is also actually examples, and I think we'll talk to that in terms of what is being done within the Mpumalanga area as an example of treatment of water and actually utilization of some of those water. The issues relating to Upper Vale and Komati, where we have many new applications of mining, obviously within the context of what we are currently doing, we have to manage these new applications in terms of what is likely to happen in terms of some of the risks that we have indicated. Within the case of KwaZulu-Natal area, the majority of the mines there are more coal mines, so to speak, compared to, say, for example, what we'll be talking about. Some of these are reported as having been abandoned and defunct, and I think as soon as we look at that, we need to accept that there is going to be quite a lot of demand on the resources to actually manage that across the board. So we are also looking at this at the highest level in terms of what needs to be done to address the problem. Some of these, or most of these, are depending acid mine drainage, and the existing coal mines generated by acid mine drainage generate acid mine drainage, but the measures still need to be taken to treat the drainage or the acid water. And some processes, as I said earlier, have already been started to address that, to address the problem. With the coal mines, the issue of introducing integrated water resources management, which would involve all stakeholders, catchment management agencies, currently largely located within the department, of course, water management, river forums, and so on. We have actually interacted with, for example, Oliphant River Forum, mines, local authority, and other relevant departments. This becomes a very holistic approach in terms of trying to address some of these problems, because various stakeholders are involved. Critical as well is the issue of stopping illegal mining, so that at least we are able to manage that, and implementing stricter controls on discharges. There are some examples in terms of some of the mines that have been indicated there, in terms of what trying to stop the process itself. We have a three-year project to identify pollution sources in the Olifants, treatment of AMD to potable standards. Two plants are already built there, New Optimum and Emma Lasheni AMD treatment plants. I think some of you may be aware that the minister have actually opened one of those. And I think that it may be useful as part of the process of this committee going out to actually maybe look at that as well, so that they can see what is happening. And I think most of that is looking more limited in where the existing activities are taking place, whereas on the other side, especially in the West, mostly we are talking about abandoned mines. So we are treating the legacy. So one can also look at what can be done as we go into the future as well in terms of that. The refurbishment of breastplate water treatment works as well, which is part of that. And I think at this stage, before I get into all details now, I will ask Marius to continue so that he can go into some of the details, but he is now more focusing on the Witwatersrand Strand area, which is quite in the people's mind.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning. As Mbangu has said, I'll be focusing on the Witwatersrand. And I will go immediately to the map. I think that's easier to explain to people exactly which area we're covering. If I look at the eastern side, the whole Witwatersrand has been subdivided into four underground basins. What we call just a water basin, that's underground. We take it from the east, that's the Grootvlei area, where Grootvlei mine currently is pumping water, that's Nigel and Springs, that area. And if we go to the central basin, that's what we call Eastern Basin, the central basin is from Germiston to Roodepoort, and it's also underneath the city of Johannesburg. If we go to the western basin, that's the Randfontein area, Randfontein-Kreersdorp area, that's called the Western Basin. And then here, if we go to the far western basin, that is the area in Carltonville and Kutsom and those areas. Slightly more detail, mining started more than 100 years ago, and dewatering took place to explore the reserves. Many years ago, 100 years ago, it was just water and the reserves were covered underwater. Now, to be able to mine, you have to take out the water, we call it dewatering. At that time, there were no environmental laws. So there were no water, there wasn't a Water Act, and not even the Department of Mineral Energy had any act, or Department of Environmental Affairs. So there were uncontrolled slime deposits and uncontrolled releases. At the time, even the department, I don't know, I think it was called the Department of Irrigation, went so far to say that slime stands could have been, they could put slime stands on the dolomitic compartment, which is the most stupid thing to do, but at the time, to the knowledge that they had at that stage, that was probably the best decision they could make. But now we're struggling with that challenge. And there were, of course, no in-stream water quality standards. We've got all the standards and all the policies are in place today. 100 years later, many of these mines have now closed down, and all these compartments are now being rewatered. So the water is now filling up, and all the newly formed voids filling up. So there were, you know, where there was soil and geology and rocks and gold reserves, there's nothing now. Huge voids, and those voids are being filled up now with water. And of course, this is where acid mine drainage forms. Because to form acid mine drainage, you need the three elements. You need the pyrite, that's where you sit with the ore, and you need oxygen, and you need water. So now you've got all those three elements, and this is why you have AMD formation now, whereas in the past there was no acid mine drainage. And of course, the integrity of geology is a huge problem. I will go in much more detail in terms of the central basin. And of course, decanting, this is what we're experiencing in the western basin. Just to go in slightly more detail, the area, that's the eastern basin, and I'm not going to give you all the names, but this is the big area, the eastern basin. Now, Grootvlei is currently the last mine pumping from this basin. Now, many years ago, I think about 15 or 20 years ago, there were 21 mines pumping. And currently, there's only one mine pumping, and that's Grootvlei mine. So, you know, all the pumping, you know, where it was maybe from Grootvlei 10 megaliters today, they're currently pumping between 80 and 108 megaliters today. That's 108 million liters of acid mine drainage they're currently pumping. The water level is about 700 meters below surface. And I think you all saw in the newspapers, they've got serious financial problems. I mean, I just learned yesterday that, you know, they don't have money to buy chemicals to treat the water. And yet they are still discharging this water coming from the soil. Substandard influence, of course, is contaminating the Ramsar site. Just below the Grootvlei area, there's a huge Ramsar site, and it's currently being polluted. Pumping station can be flooded in 30 days if stopped. So they're currently pumping, there's no mining taking place, so they're just keeping the water level below the reserve to be able or to ensure that whatever is taking over the mine, that they still have reserves to mine. Now, if they stop the pump, then the pump station will be flooded in 30 days, and then you lose the basin because, I mean, there's no place where you can put in your pump station. Then decanting will probably take place in the town of Nigel in 3 years to come from now on. That's also an estimate, we're not sure exactly, but you know, it's probably 2 to 3 years. And what I can say is that the department has taken legal action because, I mean, of their non-compliance to our license. There is a license, and I know we've been blamed for not issuing license, but Grootvlei has got a license, but they don't comply, and we've taken action and they're going to enforce it. This is just a typical example of where the water flows in from surface. Now, this is actually a really nice picture. If you look at this diagram, groundwater is only 38%, so this is now horizontal flow, so you're getting water from other areas adjacent to that. And there's about 34 to 38% water that's coming from the Blessbox Strait and other dams. So the whole idea is if you have acid mine drainage formation underground, you'd rather try to stop the ingression from surface, because then you don't have to pump all the water from underground after being polluted. Here the situation in the central basin is pumping had to stop in October 2008 due to safety risks. There were two fatalities at that stage, so Minerals and Resources stopped the mining there, and all the pumps were flooded. So the water level has now risen from, I think it was 900 meters now, to about 600 meters below surface. And the water is expected to rise by 600 to 900 millimeters a day. Mines would like to secure the reserve at 400 meters below. So there's a new mining company, they call themselves Simple and Gold, and they're interested to secure the reserve between 0 and 400 meters. Currently we're sitting at about 600 meters, so there's about 200 meters left.
The environmental critical level is proposed at 150 meters. Now, the environmental critical level here is a level where we don't want the water to raise above. And to keep it raised above, we need to have environmental problems. And specifically in the Johannesburg area, there's the integrity problem and questions, you know, because of the geology. And we could have seismic effects as well. Groundwater contamination, decanting below Johannesburg, I've said that already, and it could have catastrophic consequences if it's not stopped in time. A new pumping station and upgrades to the high-density sludge treatment works are urgently required. There is a high-density sludge plant, so there is a treatment plant, but it will only treat the water partially. So it will not treat the water to a standard where you can drink the water, but yet it will take the water to a standard where you can discharge it. It used to take place prior to October 2008. And of course, you have to build a new pump station, and I mean, this is where the decision needs to be taken. See, this is just a picture of the Central Basin when they were still pumping. Now, the Central Basin, if I can take it from the east to the west, you can see there, this is how it looked like. Now, the Central Basin is isolated, so it will not interfere with the Western Basin or the Eastern Basin. So there's no interference between the basins, but in the basin, there are certain sub-basins or sub-compartments. This is how it looked like in October when they were still pumping from this shaft here. So now, because of the cessation of the pumping, this water table has now sort of reached equilibrium and it is rising as a whole compartment. And I mean, there is Johannesburg. The situation in the Western Basin, at the point zone, it started decanting in 2002. And the department has issued directives to the mines to stop, to pump and treat. And the mines established at the time Section 21 companies to address the asset mine drainage. Pumping and treatment infrastructure exists, though mines have limited capacity. There are only two mines that had also the high density sludge treatment plant, where you can just correct the pH, take out the iron, but you're not going to change anything to the sulfate content. But due to ownerless and derelict mines, not all the mines are participating because it's also a legacy problem. Heavy rain since January 2010 resulted in uncontrolled acid mine drainage. And everybody knows that since January this year, we really had heavy rain, and the department had to intervene. Our minister intervened, and we allocated 6.9 million rand over a 3-month period just to treat lime, and unfortunately the lime had to be treated in the stream because there was no capacity from the treatment plant. So it was an emergency activity, and we know it's not the ideal situation. Now you're sitting with the challenges with sludge in the Teolopies Strait. Just the locality, just to give you, and I mean the picture is not that nice, but I mean that's the only mine we can do, or anti-uranium as they call today. Those are the stacks and things, so this strait is running through the area there. But at the moment, I can say that it's not impacting on the Stafford and Dave yet. Situation elsewhere, just quickly, the far western basin, the mines are operational, so there's no risk yet at this point in time. We're talking about the goldfields area, so there are mines up and running, and they're doing what they can. And, you know, the mines are financially strong enough to do their own treatment. In the Porsche area, mining companies working together on pumping, and a water utility company will be launched to continue with pumping. Proposed initiatives in the Central Basin, financial support is needed for pumping, for the pumping station and HPS work. As I've explained, there must be financial support from government collectively, and of course the mines as well. Directives stipulating pump volumes can be considered, so we can issue them a directive to stipulate exactly what we want. The challenge is it will take about 13 months to establish the pump at the 400 meter level, because what I explained is you will have to stop it at 400 meters, otherwise you will lose that reserve as well. And the mines are prepared to fund the pumping below 400 meters. Estimated cost for pumping stations to refurbish the high density flood treatment plant is estimated at 180 million rand. This is what's currently needed. And what I've said, the government still to consider acting to the contribution. Western Basin proposed initiative plus need to consider further intervention because of what I've explained. There is still some acid mine drainage flowing out uncontrolled, although it is much less than what it was 2 months ago. But there is still some intervention that needs to take place. One of the possibilities that's been considered by the mines and by government is to divert this water to the central basin. So you pump the water from the western basin to the central basin, and then you have a centralized pumping and treatment system. And it could save costs, but you know, whether that is the best option, we still have to consider. And this pumps and pipelines will cost about 40 million rand. In other words, to take the water from western to central basin and to pump the water there and treat it to a semi-standard, it will cost about 220 million rand.
Thank you very much for this. Again, I think what we now try to say is that having had all of this and being aware of the challenges that we are facing, what is it that we see as a way going forward, so to speak, and hopefully a meeting such as this will also assist us in actually putting the momentum, if one may say that. In terms of the problem statement or the issues that we need to be addressing, I think there has to be an understanding that complex decisions need to be made, requiring a whole lot of information. The department itself does not necessarily have access to all the information that are required or available, and also that we are busy with a project to ensure that we put all the information together, specifically in relation to government liabilities and so on, which we would indicate in terms of where this comes from. More information from mines will also facilitate the alignment between the department and the Department of Mineral Resources as well, because of the nature of the problem we are dealing with. In terms of the strategies and best practice guidelines, which some of you may be familiar with, and we are also refining those as well. The role, for example, of mineral resources, as some of you may know, because it's the environment in terms of some of the requirements of Mining and Petroleum Resource Development Act, in terms of management of environmental management or pollution caused by mining activities, which are covered in Section 38 and Section 43, which also provides the issues relating to mine closure certificates and so on. Within the mining basin, some of the mines are classified as derelict or ownerless, particularly in terms of Section 46 or Subsection 1 of the Mining and Petroleum Resources Development Act, and those may become the responsibility of the state. And we need to look at that very carefully to see what sort of a problem we are dealing with and how do we begin to address that. We have had a proposal to establish a public-private partnership, which was in principle accepted by the government task team that was actually created mainly by the two departments, as in Mineral Resources and Water Affairs, also including a number of organizations. I think the WRC being here has been participating to some extent, Council for Geoscience as well, and I think the CSIR was part of that at some point, and they presented some of the information they have, and they've been assisting in some of the work that we've been doing. This is based on both government and the industry in terms of contributing to the capital cost of infrastructure that may be required to resolve some of those, particularly in terms of pumping and treating of the water. We also look at a possibility of using either a new or existing agency that could actually do that. So in other words, even the existing agencies would be looked at in terms of some of the things that we have spoken about. Obviously, that would also include emerging mines or some new activities that may be coming. And the aspects of clarification of roles and responsibilities, I think those in the know will talk about the weather apportionment. It's probably not really, you know, but it's about the responsibility to ensure that the contribution is done. As far as the current developments as well, some of the things that are fairly recent and some people may be aware, the mines at some point through a Western Utility Corporation made a proposal to the government task team to address the AMD, the acid mine drainage management. The proposal was not acceptable to the department due to the fact that it was an unsolicited problem with unsolicited bids and financial support that was required to subsidize a company such as that, and it made a little bit, it was a bit difficult for the department to actually accept it the way it was at the time. But we, the mines were requested to submit a new proposal that will address this problem from the perspective of short, medium, and long-term sustainable solutions. In other words, making sure that the, what we do now contributes to the solution as we move forward. As recent as July, we have received now the new proposals which are being looked at. In terms of the crisis that we have, especially in the Witwatersrand plant area, which Marius has presented there, we do need the decision on the management of the acid mine drainage pretty soon. I think the presentation here reflects those kind of things. So we are busy also trying to address that through the submissions that we've had and also the engagement that we are having with the various role players as well. We are also busy with a position paper on acid mine drainage. I think it's very critical to note that we've got to balance the interventions now and the long-term implications as well, because we need to make sure that we don't just get caught now, but we also look at the long-term implication of that. We also indicate, within internally at least, we are looking at ensuring that we pull all resources that we can, especially within the department, to ensure that we steer this program appropriately within the department. Also that we are looking at a joint proposal between the Department of Water Affairs and the Department of Mineral Resources on a new interdepartmental team of senior executives that oversees the whole process in terms of implementation. The departments that we are looking at is Water and Environmental Affairs. You can read both departments there. And I think in there, do read Water Research Commission as an institution that has been working with us. So it's not like we have excluded them there. And Mineral Resources, of course, Treasury, in terms of some of the things that we may not necessarily be able to deal with. Science and technology, very critical, because in terms of some of the solutions that are put on the table, we need to be able to address those. Council for Geosciences, we have been working with them, and we believe that they should be part of this. And the CSIR, Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, also need to be very much part of this in terms of providing some of the solutions. Within the context of what is happening within the sort of Witwatersrand area, we are looking at the local government involvement as well in terms of being part of the solution. Last slide that I have, which you may have there, just an illustration of how the sort of structural setting, and my apology, looks a little bit busy, but essentially we are looking mainly, and I think the interest here will be that this is what I was talking about in terms of the proposal. We still have the issues that the government task team has been doing, because that is very critical, because a lot of technical people sit in there, and we need to strengthen that to ensure that some of the issues that we deal with still continue. We then have very tight management arrangements, which would include project managers, and that can be duplicated or indicated across the country, depending on the need and where we are at in terms of what's needed. And I'm pretty sure that some of the colleagues that we've been interacting with the past few weeks will also be very happy that we've got a very clear indication of public engagement, which is also going to be elevated very high, and also including issues relating to monitoring, teams that deal with operations and so on. The Mpumalanga and the Witwatersrand, in terms of Marius and the people that have been working there, are very good examples of some of the things that are already happening, but we're trying to tighten it up as high as possible so that there will be a whole lot of consistency in terms of what is happening across the country as well. So, and that is where it is. I think I can leave it at that for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Members, I need your attention. We will take all presentations regarding acid mine drainage before we give our presentation for the report to the report of the presentation. Okay, Mark, over. Okay. Next December, I think this list of meetings.
the Western Basin, which is the smallest of the basins, but which is now fully flooded and decanting on surface, but an unqualified volume of acid mine drainage is also flowing subsurface into the receiving environment. It also includes the Eastern Basin, which is now flooding at 108, or pumping is taking place of 108 million litres of mine void water untreated per day into the Blessbok Spring, which forms part of the Vaal Barrage. Here I interpose, I quote often from the Water Research Commission report. In terms of the Water Research Commission report dated 2000, it was found that the four gold mines, ERPM, WAGM, DRD and Groot Vlei mine, contribute 56% of the salt flow, the salinity salt from heavy metals, to the Vaal Barrage, but only 6% of its water flow. This has resulted, and I may mention also that Groot Vlei contributes 80% of the salinity. That salinity cost is not carried by the polluter or the industry as would be expected in terms of the polluter pays principle. It is carried by the agricultural sector and the household sector, which is inequitable and is immoral. Furthermore, it was found in the Water Research Commission of 2007 by one of the authors, Dr. Mark Westcott, that the water in the Vaal Barrage, only 20% of the water due to the heavy metals from gold mining, is not persistently cytotoxic. That means persistently toxic to human cells. The situation, therefore, is most unsatisfactory. We also have the Central Basin, where it was very eloquently explained, is rising at the moment with between 0.6 and 0.9 meters per day. It is 580 meters from uncontrollable decant. When it happens, the decant will not only emanate from one source point, it will emanate from many source points, and it will be in the central business district of Johannesburg with tremendous risk to the integrity of buildings, because acid mine drainage is corrosive to concrete and to metal structures. Because this is a holistic matter, I wish also to address some of the other issues. In the basins, we do not only have acid mine drainage, we also have acid rock drainage. The rocks that have been deposited because of 120 years of mining on surface also generate significant acid rock drainage. The tailings dams or mine dumps, 270 of them, also will continue generating acid mine drainage, not for decades, for centuries. Furthermore, there is high salinity that is sourced from heavy metals. We also find that there is seismic activity, that is sinkholes, subsidences, as well as earthquake movement. We also find, and this is a very important because I presume this portfolio also includes environment, there is significant dust fallout from the tailings dams. So that it's not just a water-related issue. The tailings dams are mostly unvegetated. There's erosion, so there's significant dust fallout, not of benign dust. The dust contains the same toxic and radioactive heavy metals that the water would contain. And that unfortunately deposits them on the land, on the soil, on plants, on crops, on pasture, and when it rains, it simply is being discharged into our water system. That is why the Department of Water Affairs may at the moment be accountable, but it must be a cooperative governance matter, because the Department of Mineral Resources must also be held accountable to enforce the non-compliance of the legal requirements of the environmental management program. The mines must abide by those programs. Then I also wish to raise the issue that at the moment there is inappropriate land development where there is radioactivity and acid mine drainage. These areas are not fenced off, there are no warning signs in place. RDP houses are now being erected on radioactive land adjacent to mine dumps, adjacent to pits filled with acid mine drainage. The communities are ill-informed, and I have been credibly informed because I do grassroots level training and workshops, that the communities drink acid mine drainage, assuming it has miraculous properties. Then there is radioactivity and uranium. Why I raise this issue is because uranium at the moment in the Witwatersrand gold field is absorbed. It's a heavy metal. It is absorbed to the sediment within the river system. It is bound to the sediment. But there are plausible environmental conditions that can cause these heavy metals and uranium to become mobilized and to become solubilized, in other words, into the water column. One of these environmental conditions is acid mine drainage. It is therefore interlinked, and we cannot only address acid mine drainage. This is a duplication of Mr. Marius Kierkegaard. Over 120 years, more than 120 mines at mine. This has created a legacy. A legacy where 43,500 tons of gold have been extracted, 73,000 tons of uranium have been extracted. Unfortunately, it left the community very unenriched and disrupted, but it also left us with a legacy of 6 billion tons of iron pyrite tailings, which in combination with oxygen and with water produces acid mine drainage. It has also left us with a legacy of 410 square kilometers of tailings dams, that is 217, unvegetated, historically placed on dolomite, porous rock, unlined, so this condition will continue and exacerbate and accelerate in many years to come. This is a tailings dam. This is very typical of tailings dams within the Witwatersrand. As you can notice, it's unvegetated. It's placed on dolomite. Uranium is low in radioactivity, but it is the chemical toxicity aspects of uranium dominates over the impact of radioactivity. The uranium has historically been sold. That was for the Manhattan Project up to 1980. Since 1980, the mines deposit the uranium on top of the tailings dam. This would imply that, and this is based on a Water Research Commission report of 1214 of 2006, that every year 50 tons of uranium are being discharged into our water system. From seepage alone, 24 tons. And sinkholes that have historically been filled with uriniferous tailings will, when the mines close, become secondary sources of water contamination and when the volumes of water have been restored. I may just mention, this is taken from a CSIR's report, that the greatest amount of waste is generated by the gold mining industry, 47%. Of all waste, that is 221 million tons of waste, which is not benign, it's hazardous, both radioactive and toxic. That was estimated in 1997. This is the result of gold mining activity, as it has left us with a pockmarked earth. Many of these sinkholes were filled unsuccessfully with uriniferous tailings, which will again be remobilized when the mines close, and it will again enter our water system. This is air pollution. This is a typical portrayal of air pollution during the dry winter months in the Randfontein area. The small particles of the heavy metals contained in the air pollution that is inhaled, the soluble particles cross over the membrane into the alveoli of the lungs, where they can exert an influence for 40 years. The insoluble particles, small particulate matter, locates in the lymph nodes, while the bigger particulate matter, more than 10 microns, is swallowed. Because the digestive system is more aggressive than the pulmonary system, it breaks down and it follows the same path as your calcium and locates in the bones, where it exerts transgenerational impact, which may only become manifest in the next 100 to 500 years. I wish to please interpose here, although I present this with diffidence and deference, with modesty and with respect. None of my statements are based on personal opinion or speculation. Every one of my statements, and I please ask you to call me to account, I can substantiate by quotations in public domain official reports. This is Rand Fontaine. It's the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee visits this area on the 27th and 28th. They will notice in the background is Sandam 20 and in the foreground is a declared radioactive lake, the Robinson Lake, which became a declared radioactive lake because of the discharge of acid mine drainage in 2002. This is the health effect of uranium particles. I made this interpose. This is taken. It was copied and pasted from the Water Research Committee 1214. This is inappropriate land development. We are showing you the picture of Sandam 20. This, just behind Sandam 20, we find there was approval given for a luxury retirement village. 50, within a 500-meter buffer zone of a tailing dam on declared radioactive dam on shallow undermined land. This is inappropriate development. This is Kagiso. At the moment, RDP houses, and I please wish to interpose, I have no malice or ill will against any municipality or any individual. But the RDP houses were erected on radioactive land, adjacent to tailing dams, and the community, because they are poor and unemployed, they plant their crops in the wetlands around the tailing dams. The wetlands act as sponges or as sinks for the heavy metals. So all the heavy metals are bioaccumulated into the plant, and unfortunately for many people, this is the only source of protein. I also wish to mention to you there has been no epidemiological studies done, so we cannot quantify health risk. This is a very serious gap in information. This is where I work. This is the Tudor Sharp informal settlement. Governmental officials just visit with us. I cannot complain that the governmental officials have not been active in visiting these areas. This is, as you can see, built on uraniferous tailings. The population group there is no foundation, concrete foundation. It's directly built on uraniferous tailings, tailings containing heavy metals and radioactive heavy metals. The radon gas can be conceived as a serious challenge in this instance. Radon gas is carcinogenic, it causes lung cancer. This also shows that this is a very complex issue. The issue is not only to treat the acid mine drainage. We find that regularly the mines are in non-compliance with their license conditions and with their legally binding environmental management program. This is one of the mines. I will not mention the name because my objective is not to name and shame the mine. They are discharged because of a spillage. Acid mine drainage mixed with a slurry, with tailings. That has been discharged unlawfully. They've dug a trench, they've discharged it directly into the Wonderfontein Spruit. Why I mention this to you, the Wonderfontein Spruit has been a very political and visible issue. Wonderfontein in English means miraculous fountain. It used to be one of the seven wonders of South Africa, a miraculous fountain of most pristine water. Today, it has been declared as being the source of all the heavy metals, that is copper, cobalt, zinc, uranium, cadmium, with the main contaminants being uranium and cadmium. This is a portrayal of a tailings dam. You can see a lot of erosion. It is unvegetated. In front, there is a tow paddock where I sit. It's a tow paddock. All the tailings dams must have tow paddocks surrounding it in order to capture the runoff from these tailings dams. Do you know? It's never been cleaned. It's fully salted up, and then it simply flows into our receiving water courses. So it's a cooperative government. governance issue too. This is an issue not of the Department of Water Affairs, it's an issue of the Department of Mineral Resources. Here we can see the extremely poor house cleaning of tailing spillages from pipelines. It simply deposits on the land. I had a direct assault against this specific man when they removed the tailings which were deposited on a private land. The pipes were standing this time, which means in all those years it was allowed to accumulate. This again flows into our river system. This is a tailings dam. When there are spillages, it is supposed to be captured in a pollution control dam. A lined pollution control dam. This dam is not lined. There was a breach in the wall and the mining company simply allowed the toxic water to be discharged into the river system. It was found in the Water Research Commission report 1214 of 2006 that the heavy metals in the river system, in this specific instance, the Wonderfontein Strait, although I want to emphasize, according to the regional mine closure strategies of the Department of Mineral Resources, here is one of the eminent authors of that excellent report. It stated that the Wonderfontein Strait actually mirrors what happens in the other Gulf fields. And it was found that in the river system, there are elevated levels of heavy metals, all human carcinogens, with the main contaminants in uranium and cadmium. You will see where there is the red color. It shows the water is unfit for animal and human consumption. Any quotient above one represents a health risk. From here, you can see the purple, the blue, and the red. It shows elevated levels of sulfate. The regulatory limit, and I hope Mr. Keat will endorse it, for sulfate in drinking water is 600 parts per million. Over there, you can see some of the mine effluent contains up to 38,000 parts per million. I may just mention to you, when the Department of Water Affairs brought the directive against the mine in 2005 and 2006, the mines were allowed to discharge water of approximately 3,000 parts per million sulfate. That contributes 100 tons of salt every day into the Three Rivers. There can be no living organism that can survive. And the culture that the Three Rivers today is a classified five river that is an acutely toxic, high acute toxic hazard river. This is the implications of high levels of sulfate. Uranium, I'll go very quickly through these slides. You can see wherever there are the bigger red dots, it shows that it is unacceptable for human and animal consumption. I may also just interpose, this is not water in our tank. This is the water in streams. This is where the poor obtain their water for drinking and for irrigation and for watering of cattle, also for recreation. Copper. Now, why this is important, I've mentioned that the uranium is currently absorbed or bound to the sediment, but under plausible environmental conditions, it can become remobilized and solubilized. The National Nuclear Regulator issued a report in July 2007. They tested 47 sites within the West Rand Gold Fields. They found that 50% of those 47 sites have elevated levels of radioactivity. As the public, we may only be exposed to 1 millisievert per annum. Millisievert is the measurement for radioactivity. In 50% of the 47 sites, the radioactivity was 100 millisieverts per annum. It was also found that the most important pathway is the sediment pathway. Cattle go to the river, they churn or disturb the sediment, they swallow the uranium particles, it enters the milk and the meat, and it enters the human pathway. I may mention there are plans on the table, I'm part of the implementation team for which I'm very thankful that the obnoxious activists can also be part of the implementation team, in which we will be addressing the remediation of the radiological hotspots, but I beg the Department of Water Affairs and also the National Nuclear Regulator that this process must be expedited because communities use the water and they live on radioactive land. This is the result of 120 years of gold mining where there have been uranium into the effect again. The background uranium levels in again, the class for our dam is 1 milligram per kilogram. That is a dam that has never received any effluent from the mine. This dam contains 900 milligrams per kilogram. It used to be used for watering of cattle and irrigation of crops. Hundreds of tons have been sold per day to people in Soweto of the water that was used from this dam. Here is a dedicated dry dam. The radioactivity levels in the soil cannot exceed 500 becquerels per kilogram. That is the regulatory limit. As you can see, this dam contains 100,000 becquerels per kilogram. What is a great concern is there are communities living there. You can see the houses at the background. It's unfenced, no radioactive signs in place, and on the opposite side is feudal staff informal settlement with thousands of residents, ill-informed or uninformed residents. This is an airborne radiometric image. Again, you can see where there is warm colors. It shows elevated levels of radioactivity. This is in the Randfontein area. But the regional mine closure strategies of the Department of Mineral Resources, may I continue?
Yep.
Oh, thank you. Has shown that there are areas, densely populated areas, population areas where there are subpopulation groups of persons with high HIV/AIDS and chronic and acute malnutrition or are living in areas which are exposed to high levels of radioactivity. The regional mine closure strategy found by means of an airborne radiometric survey that has been commissioned by the Department of Water Affairs, which is laudation to the Department of Water Affairs, but they found that the data shows that many of these residential areas fall within areas of high risk of radioactivity contamination. Many of our brothers and sisters live in these areas, Kutsong, Pachito, Randfontein, Western Area, and Carltonville. This is where the tailings dams are. The red areas would indicate where tailings dams are located and elevated levels of radioactivity. Can you see the plumes of radioactivity into the wetlands? Where those arrows are, and it is in those wetlands that the communities plant their crops. At the second bullet point, if you can just briefly glance at that, crops also may accumulate radioactivity. It's of concern to the National Nuclear Regulator. May I just mention at this point, I sit on the board of the National Nuclear Regulator. I was appointed by the Honourable Minister of Energy. But my presentation is not in my capacity or representative as the National Nuclear Regulator. So in these statements, I presented it in fairness, civility, and justice to the CEO of the National Nuclear Regulator, that if they wish to refute these statements, then please, if I may ask, to extend an invitation to them as well. The most important lesson is that we cannot ignore any pathway for contamination within the Wonderfontein Spray, and that is mirrored in all the gold fields. Pathways, inhalation, ingestion, stay on contaminated land, crops, pasture, sediment pathway, and water pathway. Here is the last part of my slide. It is fairly complicated, so if I may please just beg your indulgence. All the heavy metals, as I've mentioned, including uranium, are absorbed or bound to the sediment of the water system. Under plausible or possible environmental conditions, these heavy metals can become mobilized and solubilized into the water column. One of these plausible environmental conditions is acid mine drainage. And this we now find is a critical factor. Because the Western Basin, which Mr. Keats showed you, is the smallest of the basin, is now fully flooded. The environmental critical level has been lost in 2008 and permanently lost during the rainy season in 2009, which means that basin is now flowing out, not only controlled outflow as it mine drainage, but uncontrolled outflow. On the central basin, we've mentioned that it is rising at between 0.6 and 0.9 meters per day. 580 meters from uncontrollable decay from different source points. The eastern basin, that's the pink basin, at the moment, Aurora Mine, and here I wish to say, I do not condone Aurora Mine, but it is unfair to hold companies today responsible for all the legacy issues of 120 years of gold mining. Before a mining right can be issued, there should have been an investigation done to see whether a mining company has sufficient trust funds to deal with latent and residual impacts that include acid mine drainage. Over here, there is 108 megaliters, 108 million liters of acidic mine water being discharged. And in the far left tank is, of course, the gold mining that is still operational of the far western basin. This is what acid mine drainage looks on surface. That is if a tailings dam has been rehabilitated, then a footprint is left. But unfortunately, the acid mine drainage then we call it capillary action ponds on surface. Then this is the eastern basin. You can see over here 108 megaliters of mine void water is discharged daily untreated into the water system. This is the west basin. If I may just, if you look on the right hand side, can you see there are sulfide crusts? These are the white crusts. These contain, according to Professor Frank Winder, 1,000 to 1,000,000 times higher uranium level than background uranium levels. When it rains, it dissolves and discharges into the water system. This is again a fix which contributes to the mine. This is what the Department of Water Affairs had done since 1996. In 1996, it was adequately foreseen that the water will be tanked in 2002. It was presented to government in the form of a strategic water management plan. Regrettably, there has been no decision to that. So in 2002, we had an environmental emergency. As a result, the mines discharged the water into Robinson Lake. It was a recreational area. Today, because of the discharge of the water, that lake is a declared radioactive dam. In 2002, the uranium level in the Robinson Lake was 40,000 times above background uranium level. There is no aquatic biota. That is the consequence of acid mine drainage. Also, during that period of time, they discharged the water into the Tweeloopy Strait, which resulted in the Tweeloopy Strait being declared a Class 5 river or high acute toxic hazard river. Then what happened? In 2005, the Department of Water Affairs issued a directive, and the mines were to comply with the directive. From 2005 to 2009, the mines were in non-compliance with the directive. They argued that it was not technically possible for them to comply with the directive. The result was that the pollution continued because it was high levels of sulfites that were discharged, also with pH shocks and also iron that had been discharged. Then there was a proposal made by the mines of the Western Utility Corporation. We do not endorse the Western Utility Corporation, but we want government please to give us an alternative, because as the situation is today, it is unacceptable. We call on government to give us a short-term, medium, long-term option, plan, and also to give us definite time frame. That is what we call upon. Then Minister Sonika, the Honourable Minister of Water Affairs, donated $6.9 million because there was uncontrolled decay into the Tweeloopy Strait. That $6.9 million was used to purchase land. The result was, and I say with great respect, that it exacerbated greatly the situation, because the land caused all the heavy metals to be precipitated in the downstream water sources, in other words, receptors out of the mine property. So we have radioactive dams now that is reactive dams that are not located on mine property. Currently, the mines has been issued with a revised directive. I raise my concern that the communities were not involved in negotiations. This revised directive, I say with respect, is now simply legitimizing or legalizing pollution. Just very briefly, acid mine drainage falls within the category of lemon juice in the pH. This is the Robinson Lake declared radioactive dam. This is, again, there is no life form in the Robinson Lake. Robinson Lake is also the source of the Tierra, and there are plumes, radioactive and toxic plumes, as you can see from this Google photo. When the water was partially treated, it still allowed 100 tons of sulfate, 520 ton trucks of salt to be deposited daily into the Tweelopies truck. There is risks to the trade of humankind. I will not discuss it in detail. There is a report pending. This is what happened since January 21st, 2010. Uncontrolled descent of acid mine drainage. I want to mention to you the water looks crystal clear. This is the color of acid mine drainage when it emanates from underground. There is no life form in the water, and all the heavy metals are in solution. When you see the photograph where they treat the water, you will notice the heavy metals that are actually dissolved in the acid mine drainage. This is how it started to decay. You can see uncontrolled flowing, uncontrolled, untreated into the receiving environment. Ponding, it is so full that it now ponds on surface. With the next rainy season, I might just mention at the moment, 4 million liters of untreated acid mine drainage is thrown uncontrolled in the receiving water course. When the rainy season starts, which is upon us, there is no capacity. It will simply continue and exacerbate. During the rainy season of 2009, 60 million liters of uncontrolled acid mine drainage was discharged. This is lime treatment. That is what precipitates the heavy metals from the acid mine drainage. This is what is contained in acid mine drainage. It's a cocktail of toxic and radioactive heavy metals, uranium, iron, high sulfur, low, manganese, and so on. This is the sludge that is produced after treatment. That sludge can only be disposed of on a licensed site, such as a tailings dam. Unfortunately, the capacity within the mines are now depleted. There's no more capacity to store the sludge. This is their last pit. It's fully filtered with radioactive and toxic sludge. Acid mine drainage, very briefly, is a health impact. The chronic exposure to acid mine drainage can affect the neural development of the fetus. It can lead to mental retardation. The chronic exposure to acid mine drainage can cause cancer, it can cause cognitive malfunction, and it can cause skin lesions. This is not a trivial matter. What is of importance, and that is where uranium and radioactivity and chemical toxicity are interlinked, is the fact when the decay started, apparently, even though the mines downstream in the lower Bonnefontein spray could manage the discharges of uranium more responsibly, the uranium levels in the Boskop Dam, which is one of the main reservoirs for Potchefstroom, increased. According to a peer-reviewed study by Professor Dr. Frank Winder, it is found that every year 800 kilograms of uranium now deposits within the Boskop Dam. That is linked directly to the defense. I won't go into this. This is an environmental management program from Anglo Gold Ashanti, where it was stated in the environmental management plan that there are transgenerational impacts because of heavy metals. But please just notice the first bullet point. Communities are ill-informed of the impact. And there are transgenerational impacts that will last for 100 to 500 years. This is the land that Minister Sonita had donated the money for. This shows treated acid mine water on the right-hand side and untreated on the left-hand side being discharged out of mine property into the community space. This is the result of the lime treatment. It caused the hippo dam, where the hippos live, it caused the dam to become fully salted with a sludge containing radioactive and toxic heavy metals. This is what the dam looks like. In other words, the downstream dams have become reactor dams. These are out of mine property. This is what formed in the Tweeloopiesvrou. This is part of the crocodile system. This is all the deposition of the heavy metals, manganese, uranium, sulfate, and iron. The problem with this was done when the lime was added. The problem is the moment untreated acid mine, which is happening now, flows into the Tweeloopiesvrou, it immobilizes and solubilizes these heavy metals, so it enters into the water column. This is what the water looks like, where it flows out of the Krugersdorp Game Reserve into the Rietvlei and Crocodile River. You can clearly see it's water that has an unnatural color. I won't go into this, but it's on your paper. Wherever there is the red mark, this is the directive that was issued by the Department of Water Affairs. As you can see, the mines were in non-compliance habitually. The directive. You can see the red lines wherever there is conductivity, the red line is above that, far above what the directive directed. As you can see again, conductivity, sulfate must be 600, here it is almost 2700. You have uranium spikes, you have iron loads with low pH. Manganese, where the red line is where it ought to be, you can see how elevated the manganese is. The problem now, and I please beg in the office of the Department of Water Affairs, I do not wish anyone to harm the legislature, but the new directive that was issued is now legitimizing this pollution without consultation with affected downstream water users. I do know that in a catch-22 situation, it's an extremely complex situation, but we cannot legitimize pollution. The National Water Act says we must prevent, control, remedy. This will remain, acid mine drainage issues will remain, not for decades, for centuries. And as a social justice activist, I want to say it is unacceptable that downstream water users and the poor communities should be left with gaping holes in the ground, polluted rivers, unenriched and disrupted. Because the mines within the gold mining sector is about to close. The last man standing will be Goldfields. Within 40 years it will close. And poor communities will carry the legacy. What farmers can buy their water, they can buy mineral water, but poor communities are reliant on our sources of water. I thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. still have quorum for the vote, the committee report and so forth? Quorum. Quorum for the adoption of minutes and so forth.
The report that they will have a quorum.
Okay. All right. Sure.
My name.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the first of the speakers from the Water Research Committee, and we're sharing a slot on the Tri-City Brief. What I'll be talking about is specifically the Water Research Commission and its role in providing solutions for the problem of acid mine drainage. Forgive me if you're very familiar with the Commission, and perhaps you could have a little sweep in the first slide, but for anybody who does not know what the Commission represents, I just want to quickly go through the background. We were created by the Water Research Act of 1971 in response to a series of very severe droughts that took place in the 1960s. And it was a recognition that having enough water and enough water of a good enough quality for use are critical to the long-term sustainable development of social and economic activity in South Africa. There have been decades of research and development work, and a lot of this, in fact most of it, is really good work. In the South African research community, we have some world-class scientists and engineers, and this has provided for the development of the policies and strategies that we have today that do allow for the sustainability of our water resources. And for anyone who's not aware, legislation like our National Water Act, for example, is held up globally as an example of really good piece of legislation. It's just in the practicalities that we take at home. The activity of undertaking research work to underpin strategy and development emphasizes the role of water-centered knowledge, the role it has played in the past, but also its increasingly important role in the future. We need to generate new knowledge to enable us to deal with challenges that are coming over the horizon today, next year, in 5 years' time, or in 10 years' time. We have very limited resources for this topic, and we do need to take care of them. So our legal mandate, then, is not as a government partner for the regulator. We're not an educator. We have the mandate to support the generation and dissemination of new knowledge relevant to water in South Africa. And this is given us an integrated approach to meeting the water sector research and development needs. The reason it has to be an integrated approach is because the problems that we face are very complex, they're interdisciplinary. We can't solve all the problems of acid mine drainage only with chemistry, only with engineering, only with biology. We need mixtures of all of these. How we go about this is to undertake an ongoing identification of these. So we look at the problems that we face right now today, and those are our short-term needs. We look at what we can see arriving in the next few years, say there are even challenges, and then we're looking much further into the future. So that when, for example, the Department of Mineral Resources or Watershed comes to us and says, we have a new commission, how do we deal with it? We hopefully by then will have a background of two or three projects that we can think of and say, here are some solutions we can help you with this in the future. And to that end, we've constructed ourselves out of a set of key strategic areas, what we call KSAs. And those areas are topic specific, and they focus on investing, so funding, knowledge creation, and then knowledge transfer and knowledge dissemination. The key strategic areas then, there are five of them. Two of them come under water use, and that are those two are water use and waste management, which is where I live, and water utilization and agriculture. Underwater resources, which is where my colleague Dr. Adams lives, you find water resource management and water link ecosystems. And then we have a separate KSA or key strategic area for water-centered knowledge, which deals with targeting audiences at different levels, the public, the research community, the political community, and disseminating the new knowledge to their communities. Because if we complete the project and then we close the report and put it on the shelf and we say we did a great project, it's not going to help us. So in water use and waste management, we are a department divided into what we call thrusts, and there are five of these. And you can see on the slide in red, thrust 4 includes industrial and mine water management. And this is where the majority of the projects that I take care of will sit. Our focus areas have really fallen into three general areas, and you will find, if you're interested, when you've left the room,
inside your document pack, you have a summary report, which is 5 pages, and it goes into these areas in a bit more detail. There are two aspects of research relating to improved predictive ability, and this is a special attention. The first of these is to increase our ability to predict the generation of acid drainage. As has been pointed out already, acid rock drainage or acid mine drainage is acidic metal-laden water which is generated when microorganisms, metals, oxygen and water all come together. This can be a natural process, which is why it's often called acid rock drainage, or it can occur because of human activity, which is why we call it acid mine drainage. In addition to trying to predict where and how acid mine drainage will be generated, we focus projects on trying to predict what the rise in water levels will be, and or the time and the point of recount of the surface, whenever the pumping associated with active mining stops. You've already heard when mines are active, the mining companies pump the water out on a continuous basis. But when mining is ceased or the mine becomes an orphan, then pumping stops, and that's when we start to see the results of active mine drainage emerging on the surface. Our second topic area, or focus area, is to minimise the production of acid mine drainage and to minimise the impact that what we produce has on the wider environment. Different approaches have been evaluated to reduce the production and reduce the impact of AMD. For example, as has already been mentioned, the Department of Mineral Resources is implementing the regional trading company that was developed in a collaborative project in the West Coast. And this was a method to ensure responsible trading of mines that were exploiting the same ore body. So you have a body of ore underground, a number of mines tunneling or shafting their way down to it. And this is a fundamental change from the previous approach, in which we had a mine by mine dispensation that meant that the last mine standing in a particular ore body ended up being saddled with the responsibility for dealing with the environmental legacy of all the other mines in that body, which is evidently not fair. Then our third focus area is other treatment technology. South Africa, for the last decade or so, has really been at the forefront of AMD treatment technology. We do have some really top-class engineering and scientific solutions. And this is largely because, in contrast with other mining regions like Northern America and the US and Canada, where the region is water rich, we are water poor. We don't have enough water. So we face not only the low pH or the high acidity associated with acid mine drainage and the developmental problems, but we don't have the dilution potential that countries like Canada have. They have, for example, 11 feet of rain a year, which is just over 2.5 meters of rain. We, by example, have about 3 to 4 centimeters. So in their case, in a lot of instances, the solution is dilution, but for us it's not. It's already been stated this morning, efforts from the gold mines in the most recent estimate contributed around 35%, so just over a third of the salinity load that goes into the Vaal River. But that one third of all the salt is contained in 6% of the water flow. So that very small flow is extremely damaging, which on the one hand gives us a very serious problem. On the other, it means if we can isolate that flow, we can treat the majority of the salt problem in a very small volume of water. So we're focusing a lot of research on developing technologies that reduce sulfates, they remove metals, and they neutralize acidity all at the same time. If we manage to pull that off, we'll be able to sell it to everybody. Canada, Australia, everyone will want it. So if we turn then to previous water research commission projects, a total of 38 projects have been completed so far, and in your brochure, which you have in your pack, I trust, you have an abstract of each individual project. Now, the brochure doesn't deal with the project that you can and you also have an order form in the very back of the book. So if any one of the projects interests you, can specifically, you can request the full report. We've spent in total nearly $25 million on supporting research to deal with acid mine water-related issues. This is just a drop in the ocean. It's not nearly enough. We know we need to do more. We haven't developed all the tools that we need in our toolkit yet, plainly, but it's all been drawn from highlights. In a direct contrast to the mind-by-mind closure that we've had in the past of minds exploiting all bodies, and to complement the regional closure strategy, we have a project which hasn't quite finished, working on a mind-opening strategy for the Waterberg coal resources, which is an area which is about to be opened up. At the moment, only Hutchwerk mine is exploiting the Waterberg. And the intent of this project is to develop a system whereby all of the mines in the area undertake an agreement right up front to make sure that no one organisation is left with the environmental legacy, and to also ensure that the funds will be put in trust and kept aside from the mine organisation to make sure that there is a decommissioning plan and funds to support it. In October of last year, we had the largest ever International Mine Water Association Symposium, which we hosted in Pretoria. It was undertaken by the Mine Water Division of Research, and we had delegates from all over the world coming to undertake site visits, listen to presentations, and learn from what we're doing here. The other highlights I can mention are the first project is called the Cleaner Production Guidelines, specifically for the mining industry. This is to prevent a large volume of mine waste being generated in the future. And we're looking as well at low-cost, low-energy ways of removing metals and salts from the mixed solution. And one of the more academic projects, if I can say, more fundamental projects we have, is one called Eutectic Clean. It's a very cost-effective, very energy-effective way of taking one metal and one salt at a time as the solution, so you end up with, instead of five solutions in a mixture, you end up with five products that you can do something with. And then the last highlight is a pilot plant which we installed last year for a novel process, an ambient temperature process, so again, low cost, low energy, to treat acid mine drainage and produce ferrite, which is a mineral which is mined in other regions of the world and sold, so it generates a product from a waste. In the future, what we want to focus on more is more waste minimization, waste prevention. It's all good to have technologies to deal with waste, but it's better not to generate it in the first place. So we're looking more in the future at pollution prevention, infrastructure treatment. We need better water quality monitoring, and also refer this morning to unknown, uncontrolled, uncontrolled releases that we've got. And we need to know what it is that we're dealing with in order to figure out. And two of those are the platinum group metals haven't been on the map yet, but it's only gold streets, and we've been mining in this country, and we are going to have a problem with them in the future. They're very low volume, but they're extremely inert, which is why we use them in medical applications and implants, because they don't react. But because they don't react, it means they're very difficult to remove. And then we're looking in the bigger picture at inspecting water footprint, carbon footprint trade-offs in mining. A lot of energy at the moment is going into increasing water footprint, but as far as the wider environment is concerned, that actually might not be the best thing to do. So at the moment, we don't really need more research to demonstrate that we have a problem. We're all in the room today because we know we have a problem. But we do need to focus on the medium and long-term solutions. As I alluded to earlier, having the solutions is not the most useful. We don't tell anybody about them, and we don't implement them. So we work very closely with other bodies in the region. The Water Institute, the Scotland, the Waterberg, the Million Resources, the Change of Mind, the other bodies that I've mentioned. One of the most important is the last one, the International Network of Ethics Conventions, which has recently generated a new guide, which I'll come to in a moment. There are 15 new best practice guidelines which Water Affairs have published, and four of which deal with the water management hierarchy, five with general water management strategies, and six with specialized activities. When I say specialized activities, I mean things like small scale mining, specific water management for underground mines, and specific for subsurface or above ground mines. And then last year, the International international symposium was also the launch of the new global acid rock drainage guide, the GARD guide. And this is an international best practice guideline. The development of the guideline was undertaken by South Africa, Canada, the United States, Australia, and it was extremely available on the internet. It has been published for everyone in the world to get the current state of the art technology. And then I've mentioned already we hosted the largest international monitoring association last year. It's been very brief. I've stated over a lot of what I really wanted to say, so what I'd like to leave you with where to get further information. All of the reports that we generate, not only the ones in this brochure, are downloadable as free text, full text free PDF on the website. So I would urge you, if you want a report, if you want information, please do visit the website. You can email me. I've got some cards if anybody wants to take them away. You have the Mine Water Research brochure, but I do want you to note that it only goes up to 2008, so you have a new issue coming out later this year. And you have the summary report in your blue folder. Then, of course, there is the knowledge review and the project research reports, which you can get from the website or by asking us. And at this point, I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Dr. Allen.
How the groundwater behaves in the subsurface. But the final product is a function of the geology of the mining region, presence of microorganisms, temperature, and also the availability of water and oxygen. So acid mine drainage is a problem in South Africa, but it's not uniquely a South African problem. Often that perception is created. If not managed properly, it has severe impact on our water resources, land, health, wells, etc. And in this context, in terms of what we're trying to do in the research aspect, we're mainly focusing on the bottom part of the triangle, where we try and characterize, understand, and predict, and this feeds into some decision-making system, and then also the applications of the research into making things better. And this is just like a general slide that is taken from NASA. It's important to also realize that AMD is a problem that will be with us for a very long time, potentially centuries, depending on the acid generation and leaching of the material. And groundwater sits in this funny position because it also generates through groundwater flowing through a specific ore body or waste. But it also is a carrier downstream of these for pollutants or contaminants. And so our research is often strategic with a long-term view, so we try and look at what the issue now, but we're also trying to get ahead of that research curve. It's about generating that knowledge. Our research supports directly or indirectly the efforts to assess and characterize the AMD problem. Sometimes it's not an AMD-specific report, but for example, and I'll show it later, but if we do a recharge studies, and we've seen the recharge is in most cases the driver of the system. So the more the drain, the more water infiltrates into the system, and the more water is able to keep some of the nasty now. So if we get a better handle on these numbers, and we often see that we bend a lot of numbers around, so that but often people do not put what's the uncertainty of those numbers? What's the confidence levels of these numbers, and we often see someone calls one number and everyone calls that number without understanding where that number is coming from. So we're trying to get a handle on this and try and improve these numbers so that we are better prepared in terms of predicting and then modeling, etc., these systems. So we mainly develop tools, methodologies, and more very important is whether in the individual or in the institutional capacity. So what we are trying to do from a groundwater perspective is we look at groundwater occurrence, we look at groundwater pollution, the sources, the behavior of the pollutants. We also look at vulnerability, the risk, and then as a concept. What does it mean in terms of users? And if you look at the top end, right hand cartoon, you'll see that it's not just one system. If there's a community, it means they have put some. Ultimately, we develop cocktails. And so we can't just look at a specific pollutant or a specific issue in isolation, but we need to look at what's contributing to these groundwater systems, because it might be generated on site, but it can be transported several hundred kilometers or tens of kilometers away from the site without anyone picking it up. So we also look at groundwater protection. Well, how do we protect our existing resources, and how do we go about doing that? Okay. And just in terms of everyone, we often have, if you look at the bottom cartoon, groundwater is that part that occurs in the saturated zone. So at that level where we have a water table, all the void spaces are full. It means we're dealing with groundwater. If it's in the unsaturated zone, it means there's a combination of air and soil water, etc. And we also see that some of these systems are ultimately linked, for example, to surface water resources. So if it happens in the groundwater, it will come out somewhere. Related to that is that the previous legislation did not see that link, and then which caused a lot of these issues. Everyone spoke about asset mine drainage or generation, and if you just go from 1 to, it should go to 6, we have the sediments and the ore reaching in iron sulfide, that's the pyrite. And what we are doing in the right-hand side in the red is in terms of the research that we're trying to support in terms of the hydrogeochemical characterization of these things, the aquifer characterization of where it occurs, how it occurs, and what are the factors that will cause this mobility of some of these elements. So, for example, groundwater low in oxygen, mining exposes pyrite to high oxygen. So all these elements are already there, but it's because of the mine. So we need to understand what are those trigger mechanisms, what are they. So we're trying to develop models that can, when we put different scenarios within these models, okay, what will trigger this to generate certain things. So we're also developing at the moment sampling protocols for radioactive elements in water, which is not existent at the moment. And also how these elements, once it's been mobilized, once it's been occurring in the water, how it's transported all over the plant. So we look at the hydrogeochemistry and the hydraulics, and also link to the fate and transport of these elements. And ultimately, it pollutes environment. So we do a lot of what are the likely impacts on the receiving environment. We are currently doing a lot of research on cast hydrogeology, because acid and the calcium carbonate equivalent would be something like Eno. If you add water to it, it fizzes, so it dissolves, and that's the type of area. And also to predict what is, and ultimately what this picture then tells us, or the research, is how to improve the remedial action of these processes. And just in terms of, if you look at general source water protection, what we are currently doing, and you'll see our logos all over the place, and we're doing projects dealing with various aspects in terms of aquifer characterization. We just initiated a study that will look at the affected areas, gold mining areas, under the FESTA region, where we will pool all the available knowledge into a central document and start analyzing that information to start building what is the base at the moment. It's a bit fragmented. We have a publication on inventory of land use and contaminants, Capricorn Ecoco Management Plans done by a different colleague, and we also do a lot of work in how do we assess the vulnerability of our aquifer systems to some of these pollutants we receive. And ultimately, this fits into the bigger picture. We're developing monitoring protocols, we're developing our material for public awareness, etc., on a groundwater. And then in the past, we've done a lot of groundwater recharge studies to quantify what is coming into the system, hydrogeochemical characterizations of aquifers, mine water discharge prediction, rehabilitation issues done by other colleagues, and predicted impact of flooded mines. And there's some of these reports date back to 1995, so we could already say what's going to happen 10 years ago. So that's the role that we're trying to fulfill, is to look ahead. Recently, we looked at the fate and transport of pollutants from mining activities, improved sampling methodologies and protocols for water chemistry so that we can pick up more and then have more rigorous sampling methodology. Monitoring networks, so we are currently assessing adequacy and how to improve the sources of salinity of water resources. Impact of mine water irrigation on groundwater resources, aquifer vulnerability assessment and methodology. We've done one for the cradle area, which shows that how that system, the vulnerability of that system in terms of geological makeup, etc. Water-related impact of small-scale mining, and I think it's in the back, in intermine flows in the coal field. And what we are looking at in terms of our future plans is linking water resource protection with emerging water quality issues. So start again trying to get ahead of the curve of what are the things that we are not looking at now that might be a problem in the future if the technology to detect these becomes available. Water quality modeling and model development, innovative approaches to identify pollution sources, water resource protection zoning. A lot of our protection zoning is currently imported, where our aquifer systems in South Africa is such a complex nature that some of these protection zoning methodologies are not really applicable to what we are doing. Of course, we're dealing with fractured systems, so it bypasses and it's the flow is extremely far in some cases. Colleagues are looking at implications of raw water quality on water resource supply, and we've also recently started to look at groundwater surface water interaction, because we don't really, we know it happens, but we don't have the methodologies and the tools to quantify those type of things, and also, as I mentioned, carbon hydrogeology thrust. But ultimately, what we want to do with the research is that we want to expand our current knowledge, and so that we have more confidence in what we are saying and what we are doing for improved decision making, and then a very proud output part is that we develop care skills in this field, because we don't have a lot of modelers, we don't have a lot of hydrogeologists, and the Water Research Commission in this field is the premier organization for producing this type of research. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will now open up for clarification sessions. But to accommodate everybody, I would request members to really not ask more than two questions at a time. And then after responses, I'll go for the second round, and the third round is time. So, Mr. Morgan, Mrs. Lovemore,
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to all the presenters. Good day. One of my favorite subjects. I think that, firstly, thank you to the department for being frank about the issues. Thank you to Mariette for your ongoing commitment and expertise on the subject. Your presentation was illuminating and distressing all at the same time. So thank you very much. And to the Water Research Commission for your ongoing work on this. We're obviously going to go and see for ourselves next week, so I think much of the discussion can probably happen there or thereafter. But one of the things I'd like to ask pretty much the department is there is a short-term, medium-term, and long-term nature to the interventions that are required to deal with acid mine drainage. And then certainly long-term has to include the necessary strategy to make sure that we don't continually repeat the problems that have happened over the last 100 years, bearing in mind that there are literally thousands of new order mining rights in South Africa. My question is to engage the department on really the kind of organizational way you're going to deal with it. I was quite happy to see a proposal in your presentation, which you said looked complicated, it's not that complicated, of how you might put together an organizational unit. And I'd like to speak more about that. The reason why I'm interested in that is that you have quite correctly said that this is an interdepartmental challenge in some respect. Mariette agrees with that, intergovernmental challenge. And therefore getting the various players in place in order to act on this is difficult. And, you know, we all know that in government, bureaucracy is difficult and people have lost it. Simultaneously have to pursue a number of other agendas and line functions that they have. Therefore, is it possible, and it's possibly something we can discuss as a committee as well, that you will treat acid mine drainage going forward as something with, say, an acid mine drainage czar, a dedicated person who will be accountable for driving this over the next year, developing a policy and strategy, because as Marietta said, we have enough, we know the problem, there's enough research. Developing a policy and a strategy, which a portfolio committee like ours can hold you to account on, in the sense of setting the time frame. You're going to achieve this by that time, this by that time. This is who it's going to do it. But it's only really possible if there's one person who actually is the climate change czar. At the moment, we have some Gauteng people involved, and we have regulatory people involved. I know that all of you guys have other jobs to do as well. And yet, acid mine drainage is arguably the second or biggest environmental threat we have. So we need one person to take responsibility for this, that we can, you know, hold to account and drive this issue going forward. Is it something that you are prepared to look at? And what would that, what would need to happen? Because if it is a budgetary thing, I'm sure this committee, under the new Money Bill Act, you know, has actually, for the first time ever, the ability to actually say, well, we could potentially motivate for a unique unit that brings together all these different things with one person to drive it. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, as always, I have many questions, and I'm distressed that we are limited because it's such an important.
No, you're the second one.
Thank you. But I'm largely covered by my colleague on the dedicated unit, a czar dedicated to acid mine drainage. I'm interested, Chair, in terms of the proposed amendment of this interdepartmental team of senior executives to oversee the whole process. The Department of Public Enterprises isn't there. Now, we have recently, I personally raised questions to the Minister of Public Enterprises about Eskom's policy on the purchase of coal for the power station. She, surprisingly, interestingly, says that they only purchase coal, and it's something which we will certainly follow up, they only purchase coal from mines that comply with environmental conditions that are imposed on them, mines that comply with the conditions of their water licenses, etc. We have our doubts, but nevertheless. the fact is that many of these costs should be internalized in the cost of generating power, which would ultimately result in coal not being seen as a cheap source of energy. But the fact is also, then going back to your task team, that mineral resources, not mineral resources, public enterprise and in fact energy are not part of your team. And I find that as a very serious omission and something that, that should be corrected. So I'd be interested in a comment on that, Chair. And Chair, let me just ask Dr. Jo Bird. She made a very interesting comment. Not on number, but on future research focus with Jo down there. Dr. Bird has indicated that the current investment of energy and money in infecting the water footprint might not be the best thing in the long term. Why? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I must also congratulate Maria. I think I share the same like other members, as you were teaching. Our eyes were actually becoming vegan there. As we're listening, because really I agree with you when you say you're actually a grassroots activist. Because many a time church that officials I'm not trying to point the fingers at our tech officials, but many a time sometimes either be the minister or the committee, people always present what they want you to hear, not actually the reality and the naked truth as it is on the ground, so that you can be able to understand what exactly you are dealing with. And I think we have done exactly that. And I think for me, the department and even the research council for that matter, I hope they were listening and actually taking something from what you were saying. Because actually, it's what, there's a difference between the government of the people, for the people, and maybe the previous government. The government that we are dealing with, that we are sitting around talking about, is a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. That's the difference that the officials in any level of government have to understand, that you are the servant of the people. You are not just a bureaucrat that sits at the office and produces good documents that are high flown, but you go down and understand the nitty-gritties of what affects the ordinary masses of the people, because those are the people that are, that count at the end of the day. Having said that, I also want to, on the structure, the environmental district, structure that is proposed. This slide doesn't even have a page. I think it's the second last page of the presentation. I'm looking at this structure. I think it has been said that research has been done, and you find out some of the research are actually gathering dust in the archives. Because when people don't want to implement things, they just start everything in the archives and it sits there to gather dust. And then you find a few years down the line, a new study is done, and yet it is already there. I'm looking at this proposed structure here, Chef. And I'm saying this structure for me is too populated. You need a lean, mean structure that is going to implement, not a populated thing that, again, before it can implement anything, is going to take years until some of your terms at the office expire before this can be implemented. So I'm just saying, this for me really doesn't make any sense, doesn't say anything, it's just another bureaucrat. That's putting a structure that means nothing. On slide 90th of the same. If you are talking about a new pumping station that you say that there is a need, you know, that is, you know, that is needed, you know, urgently. You know, my question there is there any plan by the department on what you are asking there? Have you got any plans in place, or is this something that they've just put there? No plan of action on that. On your flight trip,
I've got none more than
the lack of treatment capacity that is compelling. I'm asking what is being done about that? Because again, it's something that they're putting, is there any plan at the end? We need to get that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'll try to check myself to two questions. The one is, I remember when Marius actually first came to Parliament and gave a presentation on Boniface's threat, and that actually opened up this whole issue in a huge way, and I think it led to some action. So, I mean, we certainly do commend you for your activism, and it has had some effect, which I'm sure you recognize. And I mean, yeah, your presentation again today is absolutely shocking. I mean, it really is sobering to look at this legacy, but also to look at what we do in the future now. I mean, to a certain extent, we can, I mean, not excuse, but we can have some explanation for why we're sitting with the situation we are. But going forward, it will be inexcusable if we produce this again in terms of the decisions that you make as a government. And one of the questions that I want to ask is that, I mean, I've been involved, well, to a certain extent, with the energy plan and the integrated resource plan, the second one that we developed at the moment for our 20-year energy future. And I've looked at the assumptions in there, and unfortunately the assumptions don't really look at the externality costs of different energy sources. And it's something which I looked at the Water Research Commission, and I don't think any proper study has been done in South Africa yet, and I'd be interested to know if you have ever been asked to be part of such a study or are looking at this, to look at the externalities of different energy sources, particularly when it comes to coal mining. Because I think that we cannot make a decision on our energy future without taking into effect the kind of externality costs that have been brought to our attention yesterday. And I'd be interested to see if any work has been done on that, or if any work has been planned to be done on that, because this is essential in terms of going forward. And then also in terms of the first rate issue, to my case, I mean, I was involved in that in about January when it was first brought to my attention. And I mean, it's shocking what's gone on there. I mean, on many, many different levels in that mine. What I'm really interested to find out, though, from the Water Affairs is that, is there enough legislative measures in place for us to take quick, expedient action against mines that do these kinds of things? Because what I saw in the case of the Kloofstone mine is that it took a while. I mean, we're still about 8 months down the line now, and we haven't resolved that issue satisfactorily. I mean, is there enough legislative measures, or do we have to strengthen you more so that we can actually deal? Because this is, I mean, as you say, 50 days no pumping, and that pump station's gone. We're sitting on that kind of a crisis, so we have to make sure you're armed as much as possible to be able to take action. And I just get the sense that we seem to be up against a number of factors there which struggle to come to grips with that kind of situation. Not just critically, but I mean, if anything happens at any other mine, are you sufficiently armed, or do we have to do anything else to arm you more?
Now,
no, I was informed by the Philip of his arrival here that I adopted the name of Spain. Let me also congratulate Umarek on the management. Thank you very much. You know, you were so superb, like really an excellent presentation. In the parliament that is also tried to ask, I could say that a few times, because as we're going, we really give sentence way to very sensitive to people. That's why you are applauded here. I don't know whether it's pointed to the same. She deserves that. My question is just one, and it goes to the department. Around the issues that have been highlighted by the NGO and the research council, around the issues of monitoring the situation, I think it's important that the government is in order to ensure that we don't come across these issues when we're sitting here. They have a responsibility to make a point or visit these areas so as to ensure that there is continuous assessment of what is being done at the level where they are not. Because they are at the national level, these things are happening at the international level. And the issue of public participation is the cornerstone of our democracy, not only want to involve people in decision making, let alone the issue of awareness, making people to be aware as to what you intend to do for them. So I think it's about that we have to do a lot now. But also the chapters we have the chapters in here who is actually not sleeping when matters of this nature crop up. I'm sure it's a very easy guy that we able to go out on 3 or 4 hours and let us share our views as a community with the actual people and all of us.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you very much. Thanks to members of the committee and also to our members. That is all the things that emphasize on what we said on the green last time. The nature of the change that has been so. Because for the past 6 years, I used to be told that there was no change in some areas. And when I go there, there was no good change, only half years. But now I believe in going and replacing. So that when I come back and sit here and see the court parliament, I'm absorbed for that. And unfortunately, I only arrived when Maria Lieferink, correct? Lieferink was making a very good presentation. Coming from the same issues that I come from in Dar es Salaam, the substantive issue that I went to learn about, the University of Dar es Salaam. And now the prison is in the department. Although I did not, I was not part of the episode. And listening to what my wife was saying, you had a comment of saying that the new directive legitimized pollution. What is that? And I believe that directive is from the minister or the minister.
It was issued, I think, by the acting head of department, the Gauteng region, that is the signature to the directive. The directive allows for the discharge of 3,000 parts per million sulfur, while the regulatory limit is 600 parts per million. And that basically then it accredits to law enforcement to pollution.
Thank you very much. But at the end of the day, the people who are responsible for everything that has been said to them is the government, in a form of the department. Now, my question to the department is, do you agree with that statement to the department? And my second question is to you, that all the challenges that you highlighted is the ministry. of water and environment is aware of those principles. What is the impact of this in trying to assist this event? There are some things that you highlighted there. But when you are nearing for the finish of your presentation, it seems to keep the challenge of this. Now, the question is, there is no way that the government alone can do it. We need an integrated approach in order for us. We can all be at the same level of understanding. So we need to assist each other as people of government in trying and trying to get rid of some of those challenges, especially if they affect the lives of the ordinary people. Because Natasha and Ruby are very lucky because we do have 3 months to buy them. They don't even have 3 months. I'm not saying that they in their life. You don't know what a 3 months look like. You don't know anything. Hence, I'm asking you that since this thing comes normal, and then we have the 3 minutes, is there something that is going on? And that is what means, I think we need to convey it to the community. I'm still emphasizing that when I call for this meeting, I ask environmental affairs to be part of this meeting. Precisely because there are issues that affect environmental affairs. Mm-hmm. And they said it has nothing to do with it. Now I'm saying that it has for everything to do with it. It was supposed to be. Now I just wanted to highlight to the members that sometimes we are dealing with people that are very much out of power. So if a person can ask Shari to call for such a meeting and tell her what kind of people the United States is, and then a report is kind of thing that that meeting has got nothing to do with it. And unfortunately, our members are trapped. Only people know initially that only what happened was coming. So I just want to tell the president that, especially when I speak very near to the minister, tell her that the president is very much upset about the kind of communication that we're taking from the department. I'm not expecting it. Especially now that the president is being headed by Nino. We are all women, there's no way to fight. We are on our own. So we must do the right thing.
Thank you, sir. I have also one small line of question. Trevor.
Can municipalities identify areas where to build the RDP houses? Are they not obliged or compelled to comply with the environmental conditions? If not, why not? If yes, why didn't you intervene when they built this house or this area? Want to say something?
I'm
not
responsible. I did intervene. But unfortunately, the local council, I political, saw me as a political random. Because my concern is not political, my concern is environmental.
What did he say?
He saw me as a political contestant. It was at the time of the political election, so he then request, it's a little story, I don't know if I might be able to tell the little story.
Maybe after this you must give the chairperson that information about the council.
Yeah.
So we are going to that area. Yeah. Okay, can I respond?
Chairperson, Madam Chair, if I could just lead into the response, and if it's in order with you, I will call on my team to supplement on some of the areas. I did indicate up front when I introduced myself that I wasn't necessarily the AMD subject matter specialist, but we've got a team of folk who are working on it. So I'll run through the questions and just call on my team just to input as well. I will answer, I will make input on the questions as we go by as well. Just with regard to the reference by Honourable Morgan with regard to us needing a czar for AMD, we've got a little czar at the moment in the form of Marius Kiert. That was the action that we've taken to try and centralise the management of our inputs at one area, and we've drawn in from the regional office, because the regional office at the coalface
of dealing with some of those issues. So, yes, we have taken that action. We will obviously review that as we go forward. And the intention of this is to sort out the policy, strategy, and time frame. We aren't able to give that to you right now, but we'll hopefully in future engagements with the Portfolio Committee be able to provide that information. I take note of the comments you made with regard to the budget, and obviously that's an issue which we will deal with when we come to the budget, and the fact that the committee is, through the money bill, able to motivate for budget to deal with these issues. I think the second question by Honourable Lovemore followed on as well, and the reference particularly to the structure. That's a proposal at this stage, and yes, it's an omission for us not to have public enterprises and energy involved. We will pick up on that going back to see how we take that forward as well. This proposal is going out from the departments to the other departments as we see their responsibilities on this particular team. We're taking a lead in it at this point in time because, in effect, Water Affairs or the department is downstream of the problem, and we're trying to work back from there to sort it out. And my response there also runs into the question or the issue raised by Honourable Ndude with regard to slide 34 as well. It's a proposal we're putting forward, and we'll see how we make that a leaner structure. We need to get inputs from the other departments in this interdepartmental arrangement, and I'm sure that through that we would hopefully get something that's a lot leaner and able to produce what we expect out of that that interdepartmental committee. I think you need to just also bear in mind that this is partly a response also in terms of the delivery requirements coming out of the outcome 10 in particular, which deals with environmental assets and national resources, and in particular, outcome 3 relating to the sustainable environmental management. So this is what we put forward as a response, and we will try certainly to make that structure work. But the comments are taken, we take note of the comments. And Madam Chair, if you could, I'm needing water myself, I've got an acid problem in can you give me some water, please? And Madam Chair, if it would be possible, and I'm referring to, I'm not too sure whether you transferred this chair from chairing. Let me refer to chair, then my apologies for that, sir.
I'm in charge now.
I'll take note of that, sir.
The mayor is in charge now.
Yeah. So if I could ask the indulgence of the portfolio committee to give us an opportunity to engage with the other departments on this proposal, and we can come back to you and indicate to you, you know, how we see it going forward. But the problem and sorting out the problem is not only a Water Affairs one, but an interdepartmental one, and we wanted to take the lead in terms of dealing with it. So if you would give us that indulgence to come back to you once we've got started the engagement with the other departments. Moving on.
Sorry, Chairman, may I just clarify that response of Mr. Balder? He refers to output number 3 and output number 10. Where are these what outputs are you referring
to? Okay, if I could, Cabinet report is taking place at the moment, and the focus is on delivery. And there are 12 outcomes which are included in the change agenda for government. One of those outcomes is outcome 10, which deals with the environment assets and natural resources. and a sub-output of that, or that's the outcome, sorry, and an output of that, which is output 3, which my department has a responsibility for, deals with the sustainable environmental management issues. It's a co-responsibility between us and Environment Affairs. And that's, it's under that output that we will be dealing with the issue of AMD as well. Madam Chair, sorry, I nearly made the wrong reference again. Chair, maybe at some stage we can have an opportunity, once we've had the feedback coming out of the Cabinet report, to indicate how we're going to go forward in terms of actually delivering on those outcomes and outputs which form part of the ministers, the various ministers' performance agreements. But outcome 10 in particular, Minister Sondhika is the lead minister for outcome 10. And then as one of her second departmental responsibility, we've got a lead in outcome 3. I trust, Chair, that helps the clarification help. If I could then move on to the other points raised by Honourable Nduda, and just ask with regard to the pumping and the treatment capacity whether Marius can come into those. That was a question on slide 19 and slide 22.
Thank you very much. The question is whether there's some plans in action. Yes, there is. We are doing it together with the mine industry. And we're thinking back to bring out a new solution in terms of how to solve the problem, because at the end it's still their problem. So we're waiting for that now. We've just received it, but we will have to go through it in detail. But the idea is to build a pump station, and that pump station needs 180 million rand, of which they committed 55 million rand already. And this is now a challenge in the department as to where the rest of the money will come from. We will engage them within the next week or two to discuss the details of the pump station.
The other one is around
See, the other one was the question about the Western Basin, the decant, and the fact that Marie put on the table were correct. Before January this year, there were two mines pumping and treating, and they could handle the acid mine drainage flowing from the decant. That was at a rate of about 25 megalitres per day. Since January, with all the abnormal rains we had, there was uncontrolled acid mine drainage flowing out from the decant point. And the department had no choice but to intervene. That's why the minister said that we must make available 6.9 million rand to force the mine to treat the water. Now, unfortunately, they did not have the capacity in the treatment plant. Hence the fact that they had to treat it in the stream. So we had a choice between either we let the acid mine drainage run uncontrolled at a pH of 3.5 with 800 milligrams per liter iron, in the drill of the plate, or we at least treat the acid mine drainage to raise the levels of the pH and to bring down the iron. Now what happens is this settled down in the what Marie called the hippo pool. Now if I can just elaborate on that, the hippo pool was many years ago a dry dam. There were no hippos, nothing. So unfortunately the hippos are suffering now with this, but we did not have a choice. So what the mine said, they are not prepared to pump and treat if we don't put that on paper. So we forced the mine, and we did not have any choice but to put it in a directive and allow them to discharge higher levels of sulfate. But at least the pH was corrected. So there was no choice in the process.
So, Chairperson, if I could then, Marius has partly started to respond to that new directive. If I could ask him to respond to that now while he's talking about the treatment and the lime addition and the precipitate, etc. The question by the Chair whether that is in fact correct has indicated that the new directive has legitimized pollution. So if I could just give a comment on that.
Chair, that's correct. As I said, it was an emergency and we did not have a choice. It was either we allow 3,000 milligrams per liter, because no people are drinking the water from directly from that stream up to the hippo pool. So the elevated levels of sulfate that the department legitimized sort of other problems downstream, and that was for animal breeding. That's why the department also, at the same time, forced the mines to drill a borehole to provide water for the animals in the creosote game reserve. So that's up and running now, so the game does not only rely on water from the stream, but they've got fresh water, and we also tested that water from the borehole.
See, I'm sure that response will solicit more questions. but just then to move on, Chairperson, to Honourable Kralin's question, I'm going to ask Gerhard Muller just to respond on the adequacy of the legislation.
Chairperson, thank you. Honourable Kralin is quite correct. I think it's an important point. I think Kumbangi also mentioned in his presentation when we develop a strategy, we should also not look about solving the current problems in the future. And that's the point you made about the energy involved in coal, that is an important point. I can also just mention to the committee that we're working closely with the Department of Assistant Department in Environmental Affairs on those directions. For example, on Mapungubwe, there's another coal mine that we are this week a joint investigation with the work of our Department of Environmental Affairs to look at that specific mine. But that mine is not for the coal is not for energy, so we also look at the coal for other purposes as well. The other point that you make is on the legislative things are currently enough. We're looking at the revision of the Act because you're also right. The current court procedure takes so long. It's so delayed. The same applies to the way for the different works, and we must solve the problems. Ways to change that, and how can we engage in other methods to rectify the problem? Of course, the ultimate goal is not to find people don't check it out, but the ultimate problem is to solve the problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And then moving on to Honourable Liyanga's question or comments of input and question, I'm going to ask Mr. Nekumbada just to comment on the MLE, the continuous assessment, and the public participation issues.
Thank you very much for that. I think the question was also partially, if we look at the structure, for example, the fact that we are looking at the outcome 10, which is the environmental assets and natural resources, and the output 3, which takes to sustainable environmental management. It also brings in the element of highest level of monitoring and evaluation in terms of what we are implementing. But within the context of assessing the especially in terms of monitoring the impact, we also have a national monitoring system that are actually created to monitor both at national level, and we're also building up the sort of, should I say, catchment level or local level. Some of those areas we still have to improve because it requires a lot of resources for it to be planned. So we do have terms in place in terms of our monitoring program in particular. But those do need to be strengthened.
There's just one part of the question which I think is stems out of Warriors, input around public participation. And I think that was particularly, if I understood you, might have understood you correctly, Honourable Liyanga was relating, could have related back to the directive that was given when Mariette indicated that there was insufficient public participation. And if I could maybe get Marius to respond to that, because they were partly responsible for putting that, not partly, they were responsible for putting that directive together.
In terms of the directive on the issues in the mines, this directive was, the previous directive was discussed. We have a Western Basin Decamp Forum. It was discussed during the forum, but unfortunately the last one wasn't discussed with the public because the minister had to intervene and the intervention does not allow us any time. But can I also then just discuss the statement that was made by my head, Chair, if you allow me, in terms of water, uranium coming into the water tank straight from the decant. At the moment, the information at our disposal does not say that there is any uranium coming from the Western Basin because that water is flowing in a geologic space. So in other words, it is not...
I wonder if I could just, Chair, I'm going to stop Marius there because I don't think our role is to interrogate the other presentations, we to respond to the questions from the honourable members. So, thanks, ma'am. So if I could just ask Marius to park that and it can be discussed on site next week. Thank you. Chairperson, then I've taken the note of the comments by the chair of the committee with regard to the involvement of Department of Environment Affairs, and I will follow that up. I'm not going to attempt to make any comments on that. And then the last question was raised by yourself, Chair, as Deputy Chair of the Portfolio Committee, with regard to municipalities and their, the need for them to compelling them to comply with environmental legislation in terms of where they place residential development. And if I could ask Ilkha to respond to that. My intention wasn't to put Elkhart on the spot, but I thought that he would be the best person to try and answer that tricky question for him. And he navigated it around it in a few sentences, but we'll have to pick up and take that forward. Because we obviously deal with the water-related issues of settlement development, and we'll take that up with our sister department, Environment Affairs, particularly to pick up the issues which Mariette raised in her presentation. So if you could give us that indulgence also, please, Chair. I think I've covered all of the issues which I've picked up as relevant to the department, and if I could stop there, thanks, Chair.
Thank decrease the water footprint considerably by using dry cooling, but if in pursuing dry cooling you generate atmospheric pollution or you exert a greater energy demand because now you have to scrub gaseous waste that you didn't have to before, then perhaps it's not, in terms of the bigger picture, the best overall option to always say we must minimize our water footprint. There might be times where the sacrifice that we have to make to do that is not possible. Can I go on to a second question for the WRC? Okay, the question was whether we have conducted any studies on different energy sources or whether any energy was any were planned. I would have to say that there are some tangential studies. We have, for example, an ongoing project on wave energy reverse osmosis pumps, but because we are the Water Research Commission and the mandate is for water, the links are quite tenuous. Because, however, the impacts of climate change, for example, are intrinsically linked to the wider environment in which water sits, we've got projects which exist under, we have a research manager for climate change, and that almost by definition affects energy use.
but we don't have a specific
program. Just clarify, I mean, I wasn't talking specifically about water and I'm talking more about the kind of externality cost of pursuing a certain energy path, for instance. And so, for instance, trying to quantify the external cost, I mean, from the water sector, for instance, of massive coal mining in a certain area, and saying, if we pursue this, this is the cost to the economy in terms of the water and agriculture and that thing. Because I don't think that that has been done from the Department of Energy side, and I think that that kind of study is really needed in order to inform our decisions around energy.
I'm agreeing with you 100%, and I think if no such study exists, then to my knowledge it doesn't, we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also regret that it's been kind of bad for it.
Yeah. It's now 20 to 1, and I know that members still have some questions, and we still have to receive 2 presentations, and we must finish by 1. So I'll request that let's.